cloud. Good. And I'll load up the share screen. You see a couple of other people in the share. So great to have you here. Welcome. So last week was the fifth parak, and it was a very exciting parak. That was really the week where David was hitting his stride. He had a few false starts as David as king, but he was conquering Yerushalayim. Everything was being fixed. Right, last week was really the week of Tikkun. There, the centuries where Bnei Yisrael did not conquer Yerushalayim, that was fixed. The centuries where Bnei Yisrael did not handle the Plishtim, that was fixed. David was showing the Amunah Bitachon that Shaul never had. He was winning the tremendous victory that Shaul never had. Everything was amazing. In Parak Vav, I hope we get through all of it today. Well, if not, it's fine. But there's really a lot, and it's a very, very important parak, because Parak Vav is going to be the parak which focuses, I think, really more than any other on the spiritual life of David HaMelech. And it's something that we see so much, obviously, in Sefer Tehillim. But Sefer Shmuel does not give us as many windows into David's spiritual world. But this week, we're really going to get the perfect insight into the spiritual struggle. And once again, seeing David's trademark ability, which is the ability to correct himself. So the story of the whole parak is the bringing of the Aron from Kiryas Yearim to Yerushalayim. Let's remember at the beginning of Shmuel Aleph, when the Eli was the Kohen Gadol, the Jews lost a terrible, terrible defeat to the Plishtim. It seemed like basically afterwards the country was occupied. The Mishkan at Shiloh, which had been around for over 300 years, was destroyed. The Aron was captured and taken to the cities of the Plishtim. In that aftermath, the only open miracles we have in Sefer Shmuel are associated with the Aron. So, except for Shmuel's one departing message from himself, but the only other than that, the only open intervention in nature we have is with the Aron. The Aron plagues struck the different Plishti cities, and we noted at the time that there were striking parallels between the plagues for striking the Plishtim and the Makos of Egypt. But the notable difference that when it came to Mitzrayim, Hashem obviously took us out of the land of Egypt. But when it came to Hashem's Aron, so that time, while the Aron was redeemed, the Plishtim finally sent it back to Bnei Yisrael, the people themselves were not redeemed. They said at the time, it seems like in a world after Matan Torah, there are no more freebies. And if we want redemption, we are going to have to do tshuva. And that is exactly what Shmuel HaNavi embarked on in the next chapter. And that's what Avraham HaMelech is all about over here. But ever since then, the Aron has been in Kiryas Yearim. Now, Kiryas Yearim, the Pasuk in Yeshua tells us it's a border city. It's on the northern border of the land of Shevet Yehuda. You see, it's actually north of Yerushalayim. So the border between Binyamin and Yehuda would kind of go like this. And when the Plishtim sent the Aron back, so it went from Beit Shemesh, and they put the Aron on a wagon with a couple of cows, and the cows took the Aron straight to Israel, and finally it ends up in Kiryas Yearim, where it has stayed until now. So David is going to want to bring it back to Yerushalayim now that Yerushalayim has been captured. We're going to see the initial failure. We have to understand what triggered the initial failure and then evaluate the subsequent success. So we're going to see, and the Malbim is going to focus on this, that even though the original intentions of David HaMelech were impressive, we're going to see signs from the beginning that things are not being done right. The initial attempt to bring the Aron back to Yerushalayim with the dream of eventually having a Beis HaMikdash, things were wrong from the get-go. First of all, we should notice that the previous parak ended with David winning this unbelievable victory, and he chased the Plishtim all the way to Gezer. Right? Just going to go back to the map for a second to see what we're talking about. That battle was fought right by Yerushalayim. The Plishtim came up Emek Rephaim, the same Emek Rephaim we know and love nowadays. David won an unbelievable victory, and he manages to chase the Plishtim all the way through the land of Binyamin, all the way here, all the way out to Gezer, in the heart of going to Plishti territory. So it's an unbelievable victory. And now, immediately the Navi says, Vayosef David Od, as Kol Bechor Yisrael Shloshim Aleph, he gathers together 30,000 Jews, Vayakam Niyach David, Kol Am Sherito, Nibal La Yehuda, Lalos Misham Eis Aron Elokim, Asher Nekra Shem, Shem Hashem, so it goes to Shem Akrim of Alav. Immediately, David and the whole nation goes straight to Bale Yehuda. That's the same city. Pasuk Yeshua makes clear. The city of Bala and Kiryas Darim, it's the same city. They're going straight to that city to bring the Aron back to Yerushalayim. The way the Navi makes it sound here, it almost sounds as if they literally went straight from the battle. Right? It sounds like they almost went, you know, they chased the Plishtim to Gezer, and then no stopping. On the way back, we're not going to go back to Yerushalayim. We're going to stop off at Kiryas Yarim, pick up the Mishkan, and take it with us back on the way to Yerushalayim. This is happening immediately, is the sense that you get from the Navi over here. We can get a sense, and we just, you know, stop for a second and imagine the moment and imagine what the euphoria for Bnei Yisrael must have been. They have been fighting the Plishtim for centuries, and they have been struggling bitterly. They've been occupied by the Plishtim. They've been enslaved by the Plishtim. They've lost thousands of casualties and battles against the Plishtim. Finally, this one victory that David has, we can argue that it's the greatest military victory Bnei Yisrael have had since the days of Yehoshua, if not before that. David, with that one battle, where he not only wins here, but finally achieves a strategic victory, the thing that Shaul never was able to achieve. Shaul was able to win a battle or two against the Plishtim. David, as his general, could win a battle. They could kill Goliath. But again and again, the Plishtim would always come back and invade again. After this past battle from the last parak, the Plishtim, we never again see invade Eretz Yisrael. They have been ended as an aggressive military threat. So we can imagine what the euphoria and the relief and the excitement must have been in the aftermath of that battle. And David feels it as well and says, okay, that's it. This is the time to bring the Aron to Yerushalayim. Chazal say that we have three mitzvahs we get in Eretz Yisrael. The first mitzvah is to set up a king. The second mitzvah is to destroy Amalek. And then the third mitzvah is to build the Beis HaMikdash. And that idea of destroying Amalek can also be understood as destroying any of our enemies who want to wipe us out. And then once the king has achieved peace and we can put the army away, so then we can focus on building the Beis HaMikdash. And that seems to be the mentality that David has over here. We're especially going to see this next week. David's dream is to build the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. Having won this battle and having ended the Plishti military threat, the sense is finally, let's get that Aron, let's bring it to Yerushalayim with the plan of ultimately building the Beis HaMikdash. And that's totally understandable. But at the same time, we might feel a little bit funny because this is not a step that you take in a moment of haste or enthusiasm or excitement. Moving the Aron Kodesh and bringing it to Yerushalayim, that has to be a decision which is taken with some time and some space. And it happens to be that Divrei Hayamim in general fleshes out this whole story. What happens with us gets squeezed into one parak, gets stretched out into four prakim in Divrei Hayamim. And Divrei Hayamim does make clear that David brought together all of Bnei Yisrael. It's interesting. We have here, you know, we have the phrase Mirtza Hashem. So David actually basically has that over here. He says, Alechem Tov, Umin Hashem Elokeinu Nifritza. Hashem wants this. Like a biblical example of Mirtza Hashem. So David does consult with some of the people and he brings everyone together. And we'll come back to this. But interestingly, he says, we never sought the Aron in the days of Shaul. We'll have to go back to that pasuk. But still, this is happening too quickly. And even if, you know, the immediate aftermath of the battle we can see. So David, they win the battle, and David gathers all the soldiers together and gathers soldiers together. Okay, let's go back to Kiryas Yearim. Let's get the Aron. Even if the Navi and Shmuel portrays it as happening a little bit more quickly than historically it actually happened. We've seen this happen again and again in Sefer Shmuel, where the Navi has an agenda and the Navi wants us to get a certain feel of what happened because of the message we're trying to impart. And the message here literally seems to be we're going straight from the battle to picking up the Aron, and maybe things are happening too quickly. And that sense is going to get reinforced with the next couple of psukim, where pasuk after pasuk indicates that things are happening here which are not okay. So they go to Kiryas Ya'aron. They take the Aron, which again has been sitting there for decades, and they take the Aron and they put it onto a new wagon, and they carry it from the house of Avinadav. Avinadav was the person whose house the Aron had been in. Presumably, he is a prominent member of the city of Kiryas Ya'arim, and his two sons are the ones directing the wagon. Achyo is in front, and Uza is behind. Now, Rashi here immediately quotes, and we'll see with the Gemara, which discusses a little more, that we see here the second mistake that David seems to be making, because we know how the Aron is supposed to be carried. It is not supposed to be carried by cows or oxen on a wagon. Doesn't matter if it's new oxen, doesn't matter if it's old oxen. The Aron is supposed to be carried on the shoulders of the Levium or the Kohanim. It's supposed to be carried by people. In fact, of all of the utensils of the Mishkan, so we know that all the utensils of the Mishkan have poles for the Bnei Yisrael to carry them in the desert. So the other utensils, as soon as they got to Eretz Yisrael, they took off the poles. The Aron Kodesh, it is supposed to keep its poles on all the time. Even in the Beis HaMikdash, the Navi in Sefer Malachim says that the poles still protruded from the paroches inside the Kodesh HaKadashim. It is only supposed to be, you never touch the box of the Aron itself. Nothing touches the Aron itself, and it is certainly not supposed to be carried by wagons. It is only supposed to be carried by people. The Malbim has an interesting comment about that. He talks about the Kruvim and the fact that the Aron is the closest symbol we have of the Kisei HaKavod. And just like the Kisei HaKavod is born by Malachim, so too the Aron Kodesh is supposed to be born by Bnei Yisrael. It's not supposed to be carried by horses or by oxen. So we have a certain lack of reverence which is being shown. And Rashi says very harshly, but we can't blame Rashi for going after David, because Rashi is going to get it from the Gemara, as we'll see in a second. Rashi says, Ta b'davar shafilu tinokos shel beis rabban yodinoso. David made a mistake of something that even the kids in school know. Ki avodas hakodesh aleihem b'kasei b'yisrael. Torah says in Bamidbar that they're supposed to be carried on their shoulders. Why? What happened? So Rashi quotes, it's from the Gemara, but scroll down to see what the Gemara says. It's Gemara in Sota, right? Rava says, why does this go wrong? Because this is going to go wrong. Punished. Meshakarla Dibre Torah Zemiros. There's a pasuk in Tehillim where David says, Zemiros Hayalichu Kacha. Your laws were like a song to me. So, any lipbach is going to like this. You're not supposed to think of Torah as a song. Torah is something serious. It has to be learned and learned with reverence and with fear. So David, in a mode of spiritual ecstasy, right, thinking of Torah as song, not showing the proper reverence. That is what is going on over here. Amalakarash Baruch Hu, Divrei Torah Shekasev Behen, Tefei Nacha Bo Veineno Atakori Osim Zmir, so call me Torah songs? You're going to make a mistake in something that even the kids in third grade know when they learn Parshas Nasa. You're going to forget the basics of Torah. If you don't have that core dedication and fear, you get caught up in the enthusiasm and the moment. And what basically is going to happen to David here is the balance of Avodas Hashem that we are supposed to have between Ava on the one hand and Yira on the other hand. And we're supposed to try to synthesize those two. This is a moment where we see an excess of Ava and a deficit of Yira. And that sense of awe of the Aron and what that means to have an Aron Kodesh and to have Luchos and to have something which is a collection to the Ribono Shel Olam, that piece is missing from the beginning of this parak. And we're going to see that's just going to intensify as the Psukim go on. The Malbim points out something else. Actually, I'll go back to the Psukim to show a couple of things about the names. The Malbim says, we'll expand on a little bit. Who are these people who are directing the Agala? They're Uzzah and Ahio, the sons of Avinadab. Well, we saw that the city they're leaving is Kiryas Ya'arim, which is called Balei Yehuda. It is a city from Shevet Yehuda. Well, presumably, Avinadab, who was the leading citizen of the city in Shevet Yehuda, is probably a member of Shevet Yehuda. So the Malbim says, hold on a second. Forget about the fact that this is being carried on a wagon and not by people. But even the people in charge of driving the wagon are not Kohanim. They're not Leviim. They're Yisraelim. They're people from Shevet Yehuda. So that's also not okay. That's a bit of a debatable point. There are those who think that that these people, that Uzzah and Ahio were Kohanim. You might notice Avinadav sounds like the name of a Kohen. In fact, it sounds like the name of two Kohanim. It sounds like the mix-up of Nadav and Avihu, which we'll come back to. The Dat Mikra thinks that that these people are Kohanim, but the Malbim says, and really Pshat and the Pasuk probably, is that they're members of Shevet Yehuda, and yet they are the ones leading the Aron. Now, we could speculate here. There might be some political motives. This is total speculation. But if David is bringing the Aron from the land of Shevet Yehuda to Yerushalayim, which you know is an international city, that's a bit of a tough moment for Yehuda. And in fact, one of the reasons why Shaul may not have moved the Aron, probably an ideological reason, which we'll come back to later, but there's a political issue there as well, because in the time of Shaul, the Mishkan is in the land of Binyamin, either at Nov, that's where it was set up after the destruction of Shiloh. Shiloh is in the territory of Ephraim. But then after Shiloh was destroyed, they moved the Mishkan to Nov, which is in the land of Binyamin. Then after Shaul himself destroys the Mishkan at Nov, they build the Mishkan at Givon, which is Shaul's hometown. So you have the Mishkan in Shevet Binyamin to bring the Aron from the land of Yehuda to the land of Binyamin could have been something which was politically sensitive. Maybe it's better to just leave things where they are. Yehuda can be happy with the Aron, Binyamin can be happy with the Mishkan. So if David is going to reunite them, well, one thing you can do is at least you can have members of Shevet Yehuda being the ones to bring it back to Yerushalayim. Right? That's just a speculation. Either way, the Malbim points out that this is not okay. It's not supposed to be Yisraelim with the Aron. It's supposed to be Kohanim and Levi. We'll see that the Divrei Hayyamim will make a big deal about this. So far we're seeing just subtle hints, but hint after hint that things here aren't right. This is happening very quickly. They're using wagons, which is a glaring error. Tinoko shel beis rabba. The people leading it do not seem to be Kohanim. At least the Navi does not broadcast their identity as Kohanim. And then we have one more pasuk, which really drives the whole thing home. Navi says, "V'David chol beis shal mesachken lifnei Hashem." They're playing in front of Hashem. And now look how long this pasuk is. What are they playing with? Behol atze veroshim, all sorts of instruments, so wood instruments and kinoros and nevalim v'tupim. I'm not sure what a psaltery is. Like, why on earth do we need the detail of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different musical instruments? I mean, Sefer Shmuel and general Tanakh is so careful and circumspect with its language, and so many stories that we just get the bare bones details about or nothing at all. Why do we need to know about every single ridiculous little musical instrument that was used by different people in the choir as they're singing, as they're bringing the Aron to Yerushalayim? Well, probably because it's a Hefker belt. So the Malbim doesn't make that point exactly. The Malbim makes a similar point. The Malbim says, hold on a second. They're playing. Playing is not what we want. What it should be is lo skismechim bera'ada. They should be rejoicing and trembling. There should be a blend of joy and fear here. That's the appropriate response to the Aron. The Beis Hamikdash is a place where, on the one hand, v'samachtam lifnei Hashem, it's a place where we rejoice, but it's also a place where there has to be decorum and fear and a certain sense of distance. And here we're going too far. in a sense, everybody's coming with their own instruments. He says it's Kol Beis Yisrael. It's not the Levim whose official job it is to be singing in the Mikdash. Anybody who wants, it's a walk-on team, are showing up with their instruments. There's no direction. Everyone's just playing and having a good time. It's a party. It's just a party. And a party, as enthusiastic as we are, as amazing as it is, we're finally living the dream. We defeated the Plishtim. We're bringing the Aron to Yerushalayim. It's amazing. But still, they are getting carried away with their enthusiasm. It's all Ava, and there is not enough Yira. And that is the problem from beginning to end, from the pace they're set, the attitude they had going into this, the lack of preparation, how it's being transported, the singing. Every point is indicating that this is just not being done with the appropriate reverence which is required. And this line that the Malbim has of Lo kismeichem bara'adam. So we should take a minute to get the background on that. There are two Gemaras that talk about it. And one of them, Balei Tosfos would have an exciting comment on. So one place where the Gemara talks about this is in the context of tefillah. The Mishnah tells us in Brachos, "Ein omdin l'hispalal ela mitoch kobed rosh." We know you're not supposed to get up to daven unless you first have to get ourselves in a serious state of mind. We realize that we're not just taking three steps forward. We realize that we're actually approaching the King of the Universe, and that is not something which should be done lightly. The Gemara asks, how do we know that this is something that you have to do? It may seem reasonable, but what's the source? Gemara goes through a few different psukim. It rejects each one of them. And finally, the Gemara settles on a pasuk. Telling Amar of Nachum, Breisak Mehacha, Ivdu es Hashem b'yira, v'gilu b'ra'ada, serve Hashem with awe and rejoice in trembling. So what does it mean to rejoice with trembling? My gilu b'ra'ada. What does it mean, rejoice with trembling? Amar of Adar Masna Maraba, b'makom gila, sham tehe ra'ada. In the place of rejoicing, there should also be trembling. So that seems to be the base of Mikdash, which is a place of joy, but it's also supposed to be a place of fear. So that, the Gemara in Brachos tells us, is how we are supposed to approach tefillah. Right? The world of avoda, the world of divine service, is the world where we blend gila and ra'ada, ava and yira, love and fear. The Gemara in Yuma has the exact same analysis, except here not talking about avoda and davening, but talking about Talmud Torah. What is our attitude supposed to be towards Torah study? So the Gemara is talking about why Moshe has to wait for 6 days on the top of Har Sinai before Hashem invites him on the seventh day. The Gemara is talking about this here in the beginning of Yuma because it is discussing the obligation for the Kohen Gadol to separate for a week before the Avoda of Yom Kippur. One of the sources that this is derived from is that just like Moshe had to separate for a week before he entered Shemayim to receive the Torah, so too the Kohen Gadol have to wait for a week before he enters the Kodesh HaKadosh. So the Gemara now quotes Rav Masi ben Charash, who says that this was done to intimidate Moshe. I mean, even Moshe needed fortification on this feast. Why? Kadesh Tate Torni Tenes Pe'ima Reses. So the Torah would be given in awe and in sweat and in fear, right? Shneamar Ivdu Hashem B'yira B'gilu B'ra'ada. Same exact pasuk. So that is the world of Avoda. That is the world of Torah. The Gemara says the same thing. What does Gila B'ra'ada mean? And we say V'makom Gila Sham Tehe Ra'ada. Now, what is that place? The Tosos here quotes a pasuk in Divrei Hayamim. Just note it for now, because we're going to come back to it later. Pasuk Divrei Hayamim, which says, "Oz v'chedva bimkomo," might and rejoicing are in Hashem's place. Okay, so the general idea from these Gemaras in Brachos and in Yuma is that the world of Avoda and the world of Torah are supposed to be blended with love and fear. The Aron Kodesh is the ultimate symbol of both of those. It is the heart of the Beis HaMikdash, which is the world of service, the world of Avoda, the world of Karbanos. And it also, of course, is the container for the Luchos. It is the ultimate symbol of Talmud Torah, right? those both go together because we're fusing Torah and Avodah as the primary ways we have of approaching and connecting with Ribbono Shel Olam. And that is supposed to be done with this blend of Ava and Yira. And that is where David and all of Bnei Yisrael, in the enthusiasm of the moment, as understandable as it is, right, as sympathetic as we can be to them, understanding what they've just gone through, achieving this amazing victory over the Plishtim, and doing that right after the last victory over the Plishtim, and doing that after they had finally conquered Yerushalayim, right? The success has gone to their heads, and not in a bad way, not that they're full of themselves, Chas v'Shalom. It's just that all the success of the previous parak has thrown them out of spiritual balance. And the results are tragic, because what happens in Pasuk Vav? They get to a place of Goren Nachon, wherever exactly that is. And the Navi tells us that the oxen stumbled. Uzzah throws out his hand to try to catch the Aron. Immediately, Hashem erupts in anger, and Hashem kills Uzzah on the spot. Right? The supernatural instant death of Uzzah. As far as I know, that is the last open miracle we are going to see in Sefer Shmuel. Now, Chazal were bothered. What exactly did Uzzah do that was so bad? And there's a base of Machlokas in the Amoraim. One view, Rabbi Lazar in the Gemara actually says, because like what you know, if the cattle stumbled, then why should Uzzah be punished so severely? Because he just stuck out his hand to try to grab the arrow. So now one possibility is, well, Uzzah should have known, as the Gemara says, the Aron carries those who carry it. So he should have just had faith that the Aron would be able to support itself. Happens to be that Chazal argue whether the Aron actually did carry itself or not. So what's to wonder about that? So Rabbi Elazar, the Gemara, is so bothered by this problem. You know what he says? I can't believe this. He says that Uzzah, you know, we can imagine the scene. Everyone is partying. They're all bringing the Aron to the long trip from Kiryas Yearim to Yerushalayim. And Uzzah has to go to the bathroom. So this is embarrassing, because what's he going to do? You know, the whole nation is there and he's trying to hold it in, but like it's a long walk to Yerushalayim. So he just tries to, you know, he'll go to the bathroom on the spot. And what are we going to do? He's not going to stop the parade so he can walk off to the side. So he tries to just go to the bathroom on the spot. That's his Rabbi Elazar. And that's obviously a totally shocking lack of respect for the Aron. And so he drops down. Rabbi Yochanan disagrees with him in the Gemara. And Rabbi Yochanan points out that the Navi tells us that when Uzzah dies, Vayam Hashem im Aron Elokim, he died with the Aron. And why do I need to know that? Like, of course, he died with the Aron. He died in front of the Aron. That's where it happened. So Rabbi Yochanan says that tells you that Uzzah goes to Olam Haba, right? Just like at the end of Shmuel Aleph, Shmuel said, "You will be with me in my realm." Imi the mechitzasi. Shaul is going to die. He's going to go to Gan Eden. Uzzah, the same thing. Uzzah did not do a heinous sin over here. What's the maybe more of the pshat in terms of what happened is that there was no terrible avera. What's the problem? The problem is the exact same thing as Nadav and Avihu, who are very strongly parallel to this whole story. In fact, this is the Haftorah we read for Parshas Shmini. Nadav and Avihu, who, whatever exactly they did, in general, we can safely say that in a moment of spiritual enthusiasm, they took a Torah and brought something they shouldn't have brought in a place where they weren't supposed to go. Probably the easiest shot is that they brought the Ketores into the Kodesh HaKadashim. Ramban doesn't like that shot, but it seems to be what they did. They were so, you know, enthused as finally, after the tension Bnei Yisrael had, after the Egel Hazav, and are going to be forgiven, and they build the Mishkan, and they gather all the materials, and they 7 days of dedication, and then they bring all the Karbanos, and the fire is not coming down from on high. And finally, in that moment when the fire comes down and all of Bnei Yisrael are amazed, they've been forgiven for the Egel Hazav. In that moment of ecstasy, Nadav and Avihu want to just go all the way into the Kodesh HaKadashim with the Torah. But it's another example of the excess of Ava and the lack of Yira. And when we go too far and try to come too close to Hashem too rashly, the result is disaster. Because there needs to be a certain recognition of distance between man and God. That's the ultimate conundrum of a Mishkan or of a Beis HaMikdash. That on the one hand, it offers us the opportunity to get close to Hashem. But on the other hand, the idea of Mora Mikdash is so important. The idea of awe of the Mikdash is so critical because we have to balance that opportunity for closeness with the recognition of the gap that still exists. And then the pshat with what happens with Uzzah is simply that he touches the Aron itself. He touches the Aron, and you can't do that. He's coming too close. Was it bad? Was it being a step that was motivated by Chet? No, by Yom Hashem Im Aron Elokim. But this whole process from beginning to end has been a lack of Yira, and the result is a disaster. So the Mefarshim point out, is it a coincidence that the oxen stumble? It certainly is not a coincidence, and we know that because the Plishtim sent the Aron to Kiryas Ya'arim in the first place in a wagon pulled by a couple of cows. And the cows, it was like a guided missile. They, even though their calves remained at home, that's how the Plishtim wanted to test if this was correct or not. They put the Aron in the wagon, and those cows took the wagon immediately straight to its destination. Nobody was leading them. No one was organizing them. They knew exactly where to go. If things are operating according to plan, oxen do not just stumble when they're carrying the Aron of Hashem. That happens. That shows that something is wrong. And Uzzah is the one who pays the price. So what's so important, though, about the parak is not just beginning, where we see the excess of Ava, the lack of Yira. Right now, the question, as the question is always going to be in Sefer Shmuel, is after we've made a mistake, and that's going to happen, what will the response be? Because we know what the responses have been so far in Sefer Shmuel. We know the response of Shaul. Blame the people. Blame someone else. Deny that it's me. We know the response of Eli. Just silently accept the tochacha, but don't actually do anything about it. What is David's response? The pasuk tells us, Vayichar le David. David was very upset. The Malbim points out, even though Vayichar usually means angry, the Malbim points out, when we say Vayichar le David, that means the person is upset at himself. So he says, for example, Vayichar le Kayim, Vayiplu Panav. It's an internal move. Vayichar lo, he was upset at himself. David realizes that he has made a mistake. And what are we told in the next pasuk? Immediately, Vayira David es Hashem Bayomahu. David feared Hashem that day. We have an immediate corrective. We have the excess of Ava, the lack of Yira. We had Uzzah who paid the price, but he pays the price. But immediately, David gets the message. Vayomer, Eich Yavo Eli Aron Hashem. How can the Aron come to me? Not just any Aron, the Aron of Hashem. He realizes that he is not yet at a state where he can accept this responsibility. This is something too great and too transcendent for him right now. He's not ready, and we need to slam on the brakes. We need to inject some Yira. And that is David's trademark, the instant corrective. David didn't dare to bring the Aron to him. And instead, they take it to somebody, Ovid Edom Hagiti, who Divrei Hayamim makes clear is actually, he's a Levi. Right? He's from the city of Gath. There's a Plishti city of Gath, but that's not the Plishti city, it's the Jewish city of Gath. It's come up earlier in the parak. And that is where the Aron remains. Now, the Navi also tells us that Ovid Edom Hagiti, while the Aron stays there, so Hashem blesses Ovid Edom Hagiti and his whole house. Rashi quotes Chazal that they had many, many, many children. The importance here, truth is, if we go back to Nadav and Avihu, we have the same idea, that the Aron is not an instrument of death, chas v'shalom. It all depends on your attitude. If you come too close and you do not appreciate it with the proper reverence, it is going to be an instrument of death. However, if approached correctly, it's an instrument of life, an instrument of bracha. The Gemara says the same thing is true about Torah itself. Torah can be the sam hamaves or the sam hachaim. It can be the potion of death if we are irreverent to Torah, or it can be the potion of life. The ketores, which killed Nadav and Avihu, so not only once in the Chumash, but twice the Torah goes out of its way to tell us that it is not a factor for the ketores itself. We have this in Parshas Korach. After the 250 men with Korach brought their illegal ketores and were killed. So then we have the plague, and Moshe tells Aaron to take the ketores out of the camp and put it in the middle of the people. And Rashi says, why ketores? Because Bnei Yisrael were saying that the ketores was a sam hamaves, that it was the ketores that caused death. And we say, no, it's not. It killed another of you. It killed these 250 men. So Hashem says, no, you should see it all depends on the circumstances. If you're bringing the ketores in a way in which you're following the Torah and Hashem's commandments and what Moshe is doing, it is going to be not just a lack of death, it is going to save the entire congregation. And the same thing happened in Parshas Achrimos, after the death of Nadav and Avihu. What does Hashem tell Moshe? Not to come in any time, not tell Aaron, not to come in any time to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, but only Ki ba'anan ira'el ha-kaporas. And Rashi says right there, the drasha, that Aaron, what will allow Aaron to come to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, to directly confront Hashem, and to achieve kapara, spiritual salvation for all of Bnei Yisrael, is the ketores itself. Assuming it's brought in the proper framework, at the proper time, following the proper protocols. So what's true of Torah, and what is true of ketores, is true of the Aaron itself. It is a source of the greatest life imaginable if pursued with the proper respect and distance and awe. So David sees that. David got the first message that he needed to stop. Now he gets the second message. He's told that Hashem has sent bracha to Obed Edom and his whole family. And now immediately David realizes, well, if Hashem is sending bracha to the current custodian of the Aron, so that is now a sign, Hashem is giving us a sign to bring it back. And David, right, he's not going to delay. He was terrified, but now as soon as he gets the sign, so we come back. But this time it's going to happen, it's going to be brought back, and brought back to Ir David b'simcha. But this is going to be the correct joy, not the wild joy, not the hefker joy. It's going to be the proper joy, as the very next pasuk makes clear. As they take six steps forward, by Hiki Tzadu Noseron Hashem Shishat Tzadim, is Bach Shor Umri. They're offering karbanos as they bring the Aron. Notice that it is the Nosei Aron Hashem. It is the people who are, it's being carried again. It's not being brought on cows. It's being brought by people, exactly as we would want. All those symbols and the kinorot and all those different instruments, what do we have instead? We have the trua and the kol shofar. We have the shofar being blown, the chatzotzrot, which are being blown. Those are the instruments of the Mishkan. Those are the instruments of, on the one hand, of joy, but of course, as you know from Rosh Hashanah, can also be the sound of Yira. That is the instrument which is being used. The karbanos they're bringing, first they're bringing olos, and then they're bringing shlamim. Peace offerings, emphasizing the ava, but first the ola, the burnt offering, going totally just to Hashem, symbolizing the yira. And the psukim and divrei hayamim, which emphasize David this time organizing all the Levian to do this. And then there's an amazing, David has a whole song, which is pretty familiar because it's part of our davening. It's an ecstatic song of thanks, but it is also a song which blends simcha and yira. So, for example, the song that David established right there, Dirshu Hashem Uzo Bakshu Fanav Tamid Yismach Leimu Bakshi Hashem. There's a lot of love. There's a lot of joy and enthusiasm here. But at the same time, we're told to the emphasis on the awe. Nora who I'll call Elokim. Right? Hashem is more, it's to be more feared, more awesome than anyone else. This is the source of the pasuk which Tosfos had quoted earlier in Yuma. Hod v'adar lefanav, Oz v'chadva b'mkomo. Hashem's place is the place of strength, but also the place of joy. Blending those two is that exact message that David has received. On one hand, all the nations of the world are supposed to be havul Hashem, kavod va'oz, honor and strength, and su'u mincha, give him a karban, hishtachavu Hashem, bow down to Hashem, chilu milfan of kol aretz, tremble before him. There is the sense of the proper respect and dignity and awe in pasuk after pasuk in the song. And then at the same time, yismuchu hashamayim b'sogel ha'aretz. There is joy, there is rejoicing. Yiramayam, the sea is rejoicing, the fields are rejoicing, the trees, yiranenu atzei hayar. So David has realized that we need to bring in, in both. Right. So we have the initial stake, we've had the correction, and now David, even as he is, right, and he's all in. You know, David is micharker b'kol oz of Hashem. He's dancing with tremendous might and enthusiasm, but he's doing it with the proper perspective. You can have all the simcha in the world, provided that it has the basic framework and recognition of Yira. And that is the balance which David is able to strike. So, we're already here. Let's just finish it off. Because as wonderful as this is, right? At the same time, there's somebody there who's watching and somebody there who does not like what she sees. And that is Michal Bas Shaul, who's now has been returned, is now once again living together with David. Michal Bas Shaul looks down from the window and she sees David, right, leaping and dancing, but tives lo biliba, and Michal despises David in her heart, which is an amazing, amazing line, right? Michal, who had loved David and Shmuel Aleph, she sees this happening and she despises it, right? This can't just be a one-off moment in history. It's Michal, the gap between Michal and David must have been building and building, but Michal sees this, and this is going to be the breaking point. Michal comes to David, and every single time, three times in the parak here, each time that Michal is mentioned, she's always referred to as Michal Bas Shaul. Michal Bas Shaul, she comes out to David, and she says, Manech bad hayu melech Yisrael. What a wonderful, what an honorable day. Sarcasm alert for the king of Israel. Who's uncovering himself? He's dancing, wearing shorts, and he's throwing his legs up in the air, and everyone's seeing everything. He's revealing himself to the slave women of his servants, right? That is not the way for a king to act. David says, right? David understands what's going on. The real problem here is that Hashem chose me over your father, whom we call Beso. What is happening here? We have the ideological clash between the world of Shaul and the world of David. Let's remember, the Pasuk in Divrei Hayamim said that the Aron languished in Kiryas Yearim all the days of Shaul because Shaul never sought the Aron. We had a political suggestion as to why that might be, but it seems like there was an ideological component there as well. If David's spiritual problem was too much Ava, Shaul's spiritual problem is the reverse. Too much Yira. Too much of a focus and an emphasis on proper behavior and decorum and the honor and respect which is due to a king. Shaul never had that sense of closeness. There never was that organic relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam. It never was a relationship of Av. Yira was there. David Shaul fought very hard. Shaul wiped Avodah Zarah out of the country. And if you think that's easy, we'll learn Sefer Malachim, we'll see. No one's able to do that. Shaul scrubs the country of idolatry. He fights, he's a mikanei, he's zealous in pursuing the wars of Bnei Yisrael. But the Ava, the closeness, isn't there. Shaul never has comfort with the idea that he can reach out to the Urim and Tumim, he can reach out to the Navi, he can contact Hashem and seek divine guidance. There's always that sense in Shaul's world of the gap in the decorum, and that worldview is exactly what Michal has inherited right here. And she thinks that just like that's her conception of Ribono Shel Olam, right, that he is especially a Melech Malchei Hamlachim, that also is supposed to be the attitude of a human king towards his subject. And essentially what David is able to appreciate is that, you know, I may be king on this world, but I'm just an Eved Hashem just like everyone else. And it is not embarrassing for me to rejoice and celebrate. Ben aklosi od mizos vayisi shfal ve'inai. I could be low in my own eyes because I am dancing before Hashem. I don't need to have to stand on my own decorum. I only need to stand on the decorum of Ribono Shel Olam. And the pasuk ends with the line, the Mefarshim parse exactly what it means. U'michal ba'sha'ul lo hayla yelad ad yom mosa. Michal ba'sha'ul, once again, she's called Shelah's daughter, does not have a child until the day of her death. Does that mean that she never has a child? Does that mean she does not have any other children? Or does that mean that she has a child and dies in childbirth? All three are suggestions of the Mefarshim here. But what is clear from this pasuk is that the worldview of Michal ba'sha'ul is a worldview which is ultimately a dead end. That is a worldview which does not have a future. It's a world where the excess of yira just leads to spiritual desiccation and death. And you know, the closing thought about this is that Parag Vav, on the one hand, we have an amazing ability for David to bounce back, realize what has happened wrong, do tshuva, and repair what happened the first time. So we're going to see, and there's going to be a theme in Sefer Shmuel, is that tshuva and repair and undoing the wrongs, that is something which really can uniquely be done bein Adam Lamako. It is only Hashem who is able to completely forgive and move past the past. In the world of bein Adam L'chaveiro, in the world of human relationships, it is so much more complicated. And there was so much that happened between Michal and David, the extremely hopeful beginnings, and then pretty quickly after that leading to distance and ultimately to catastrophe. Right, and even as David is able to restore the relationship with Hashem here, the connection between David and Michal is one which cannot be restored. And it's the first of the many family casualties that David's going to have. Welcome to the world of being a melech. You know, when David and Michal were first married, it was an idyllic marriage. It was the one time in Tanakh where we have a woman who's described as loving her husband. The world of politics and the distance and the death of her family and the ascendance of David, and the ideological chasm that opens between the world of Shaul and the world of David leads us to a situation where that marriage ends with Vativez lo b'liba, she despised him in her heart, and not having a child till the day of her death. So just, you know, as we close and think and want to just think of David's own experience here. You know, Michal as well, we'll focus on David for now. The ability to bounce back is amazing, but the personal sacrifice that gets paid, and it's going to get paid again and again. Right, reaching the heart, the height of heights, and able to achieve the dream of bringing the Aron to Yerushalayim, and on the cusp of building a Beis Hamikdash, and it's a united kingdom, and everyone loves David, and Hashem has forgiven him, and everything's great. At the same time, on the family side, immense challenges. And that's something that we're going to continue to see as we go forward. Okay, so we'll stop here. Hashem, new parak next week. Thanks everyone for joining, and looking forward to more learning next time.
Thank you. Thank you.